My name is Daniel. I'm a grateful believer in Jesus Christ, experiencing victory over being abusive and struggling with contentment. I grew up in a family of five children, and I was the middle child. My parents were loving, and we attended the Roman Catholic Church every Saturday night. I can remember that as kids, we argued with each other and learned to resolve conflict by using a louder voice, speaking hurtful words, or fighting if needed. I used to watch my dad work on cars, and that taught me how to curse. Although when my mom heard me curse, she would wash out my mouth with soap. On my fifth birthday, I promised mom that I would never curse again, and somehow I've kept that promise to this day. In the first grade, we had something called First Communion, and it was an important ceremony followed by a party at home and lots of presents, along with cards filled with money. I was known as a kid who saved my money and will never forget when my oldest brother said that I'd probably grow up to be the richest in the family because of my saving. In the third grade, I started my first paper route to earn money, and I've been working ever since then. I had a best friend that lived down the street, and we enjoyed playing sports, riding bikes, and watching TV together. In the fourth grade, my best friend met another guy at school, and suddenly we were no longer best friends anymore, because he chose to spend all his free time with the other guy. It hurt me to lose a best friend, so to cope with the loss, I made a vow to never have a best friend again, because I didn't want to be hurt again. I did well in school and enjoyed having an assignment, a project, or something to work on. The last day of school for me each year was very sad, because I didn't know what to do when summer started. I felt kind of lost without the structure of school, and I really missed the affirmation received at school for performing well and following the rules. At about age 13, I discovered that my dad had boxes in the garage filled with Playboy magazines, and the images of women in the magazines made my heart race. I would sneak the magazines into my room, view the images, then act out sexually. All the excitement was quickly followed by shame. Then I would stuff my feelings and not think about it for a week, and then repeat the cycle all over again. I didn't tell anyone about my secret, and I reasoned that if my dad could keep a secret, then so could I. This just must be what guys do. My dad drank beer 7 nights a week, and I would often bring him a beer when he returned home from work. At company picnics and the annual neighborhood block party, he would get drunk, but he was a happy drunk and made everyone around him laugh. I learned that to gain friends, I had to make them laugh in order to like me. My two older siblings were very popular in school, and I felt like I could never measure up to them, so I decided to keep a low profile and stay studious. In the eighth grade, I went to my first dance and got the courage to ask a girl to dance with me. However, I felt so awkward and self-conscious that I never went to another dance again. In my senior year of high school, I had no plans for college, but one day I saw a rich kid with one of the very first handheld calculators and found out from my teachers that I could learn how it worked by going to college. So now I had a goal, find out how computer chips worked. Between high school and college, my sister became a born-again Christian, and she shared her new faith with me. Instead of arguing, she just gave me a book called The Late Great Planet Earth by Hal Lindsey. So I read it and also became a born-again Christian. For years I had heard about God, but I never knew that he wanted me to relate with him personally. In college, I got actively involved with a Christian group on campus and attended every Bible study that I could. Somehow, when it came time to ask for prayer, I could never share with anyone my secret life of acting out sexually. In fact, I never heard anyone else ever talk about that topic, so I just kept it between me and God, but I was stuck in a crazy cycle. One night, my sister and I decided to confront our parents about their drinking, because we could see that it was really damaging their life and they needed to stop it. My mom had hidden bottles of vodka around the house, and she spiked her coffee with vodka to keep her buzzed all day long. Amazingly, both parents agreed about their drinking habits, and the very next day they got involved with AA. God had answered our prayers, and my parents began to change as they followed the 12 steps. Interested in what these 12 steps were, I tried to understand how my dad could read the big book cover to cover, then start all over again at the beginning. This recovery thing sounded weird to me. I vowed never to drink alcohol. My oldest brother was a rager, and it didn't take much to set him off. I saw him get into a rage every week. One time he even struck my mother and knocked her down, and I could only stand by and watch. Unable to defend her and confront my brother, I vowed never to hit a loved one. After college, I had many job offers, so I left Minnesota and headed for Oregon to work at a semiconductor company. I worked 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. Sometimes I worked all night to impress my boss and coworkers. Our team had a dinner party, and they served wine, so I had my first drink, and another, and another. Soon I was drunk and the life of the party, and I had just broken a vow. Shortly after that, I got up the nerve to talk with women, but my only goal was sex, and so I used women to satisfy my desires while having no desire for a real relationship. After a disagreement at work, I found a new job and moved to Massachusetts, and my drinking went into a daily habit. After 2 years, my company discovered that I lied on my expense reports, so I quit that job and got another one in California. The 2 years in Massachusetts were my worst drinking years, and I should be dead because of driving drunk and passing out. I got married in 1982 and thought that having a wife would mean that my secret sexual habit would just die out, but it didn't. So I continued to hide the pornography for decades. I experienced 22 years of upward mobility on the financial side, and we raised a family of 6 children, teaching our children to be faithful Christians. We moved from California to Oregon in 95 and quickly got involved at church, where I served in leadership, attended Bible studies, taught Sunday school, and continued my secret life of lust. I could answer every question correctly at a Bible study, but I would never disclose my battle with pornography for fear of rejection. At home, I would often use sarcasm, put-downs, and shame, and comparisons with my children and wife in order to get the behavior that I wanted to see. In the year 2000, we were expecting our 6th child and discovered that our baby had a birth defect called trisomy. So he went full term but died. The loss devastated our family, and I didn't know how to really comfort my wife. I thought that God was punishing me for my pornography habit. In 2003, I was finally caught with pornography on my computer when my children and a friend saw the images flash up on the screen. It was so embarrassing to visit the other Christian family and apologize for having porn on my computer. Back at home, my wife told me to go get help, so I did attend a program for 9 months, but it was expensive, and I completed my first step study, although not using the CR materials. I started at Celebrate Recovery in December 2003, but I didn't want to be here and was ashamed of what I had done. I'd broken the marriage vow to my wife by not cherishing her and forsaking all others. I'd become a hypocrite to my children by teaching one thing, but then doing the opposite. My marriage and parenting had become very broken. The only reason that I kept going to CR was that I was given an ultimatum by my wife to attend, or else our marriage was over. Grudgingly, I attended CR, but I had a bad attitude and was very critical of the program, the leaders, and the whole process. In 2004, I lost the best job of my life and was laid off. It was totally my fault because of my insubordination at work, bad-mouthing my boss, bad-mouthing my general manager. I started job searching from home, but I was very irritable and judgmental, taking out my anger in verbal ways against my wife and children. Later in 2004, two of my sons were in the kitchen fighting about something, and it triggered me to leave my den and go fix the problem. The older son was being a bully and would not apologize, so I carried him out of the room and headed toward the front door. He still wouldn't apologize, so I lifted him up and slammed him into the wooden floor, pinning my knees into his chest. Now he was ready to apologize. That night, the police visited our home and told me that what I did to my son was called assault. However, my wife decided to not press charges. I had broken my vow to never hit a loved one. Within a few months, my physical and verbal behavior towards my family scared my wife enough that she sought protection and got a restraining order. So I was removed from my home by the police in 2005 and had to live the next 14 months separated from everyone that I loved the most. At CR, I attended the Second Step study and a light bulb went off. I learned that when I hurt or offended someone else, that I should go and make amends. So I started to make amends with my wife and children, both in person and in writing. In 2006, I was invited back into my home, and God began to continue healing our broken marriage. I started my Third Step study in 2006 and was becoming filled with hope for a better life. Because of my pride, I hadn't sought out a sponsor, so I finally found one and started checking in with him to share what was going on inside of my head and heart. The son who I assaulted in 2004 got into an argument with me in 2006, which quickly got physical as I carried him out of the house and shut the door. He then broke my nose, sending me to the hospital. The courts decided that my son and I couldn't live together, so for the next 12 months, he moved away. I continued to make written amends with my son, although he never spoke with me or wrote back. When he finally returned to Oregon, I met him and told him in person how many mistakes I had made as a parent by being too harsh on him, emotionally, verbally, and physically, and that with God's help, I would treat him better. Slowly but surely, my son began to trust me a little bit more, and with God's help, we've not fought since 2006. A leader in CR invited me to take the leadership classes, so I did, and then soon discovered that God wanted to take all of my mistakes and use them as an example to encourage others that change was possible. I started to lead a men's group on anger and have been inspired by seeing so many other men come into the group broken, but then transform into a new person that didn't have so many crazy cycles. Working my recovery program has taught me that I cannot be all alone in my spiritual life journey. Instead, I should continue living in a community of like-minded believers that share their issues and their victories as we all get better together. I'm relating to my wife with more compassion, and I can listen to her now without trying to fix her, change her, or argue with her. Instead of using shame to control her, I can use words of affirmation instead. I ask my wife out on a date each week, and I don't have any agenda, just to be with her, support her, and listen. My favorite step is amends, because it gives me a chance to admit that I've hurt or offended another person, let them know that I take full responsibility for my bad behavior, and that with God's help, I will not repeat that mistake again. The amends will often clear the air and allow me to get closer to that person and start the healing process. I've learned to not wait a long time before offering amends. With my children, I'm not raising my voice, making threats, using shame, comparing, degrading, or getting physical. I'm using words of affirmation, both written and verbal. I'm letting them know how God has gifted each of them in unique ways and that their future looks promising and hopeful. I'm asking God how I can help my children to see and use their talents for His purpose. My relationships with my siblings has improved because I've learned how to use I statements to share what I'm feeling instead of using sarcasm or trying to fix them. God has healed my broken marriage relationship when I had no clue how to put the pieces back together. I'm so grateful I didn't take the advice from others to just leave the marriage and start all over again. I used to say the very first thought that popped into my head during conversations, which was often sarcastic and hurtful, but made people laugh. Now I'm able to be quick to listen and slow to reply, avoiding sarcasm. James 1:19 says, "This you know, my beloved brethren, but everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger." I don't need to make people laugh for them to like me. I can just be myself. I used to cut other people off during the conversation so that I could start talking and take control of the conversation. Now I'm really trying to listen to others and, if appropriate, reply. That's kind of like Proverbs 12:15. "The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel." With God, I'm not following a list of rules anymore. Instead, I'm spending time with him and asking him throughout the day, "How should I be living? What are the good works that you want me to do today?" Ephesians 2:10 says, "For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand so that we could walk in them." For many years, I had mistakenly thought that God was rewarding my following rules with financial blessing. But now I know that my rewards in heaven are far greater than any fame or riches on earth. Luke 6:35 says, "But love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for he himself is kind to ungrateful and evil men." The benefits of working my recovery are many. I'm now more at peace with my spouse and children. 2 Corinthians 13:11 says, "But love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High." I'm in positive relationships with other men who can encourage me in my time of need each week. Proverbs 27:17 teaches, "Iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another." I'm not hiding my secrets and leading a double life. James 5:15 says, "And the prayer offered in faith will restore the one who is sick, and the Lord will raise him up, and if he has committed sins, they will be forgiven him." I'm learning to be content instead of envious. Philippians 4:11 teaches, "Not that I speak from want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstance I am." I'm learning to accept my circumstances instead of asking God to bail me out of them. For the newcomer, I can say that this recovery program has worked for me and dozens of other men over the past decade. Everyone that has put in the effort has become changed for the better. It took me decades to hit bottom in life, and it takes a while to get out of denial so that God can start working in your life. Instead of fighting, questioning, and criticizing the program, I started to accept it, count on it, and trust in it. Share a secret tonight in small group that you've never said out loud before in order to break the power of hidden sin. Join a step study and become changed. Keep coming back to be an inspiration to others. I've started some new spiritual habits that keep me in a healthy place. Things like reading the Bible every day, Psalms, Proverbs, Old Testament, and New Testament, praying for myself, my family, my small group, and volunteers in CR. Volunteering in CR by leading a small group, teaching new leaders, teaching lessons, giving my testimony, updating the website, sending out emails, moderating the Facebook group, and helping with fundraising events. I keep checking in with my sponsor, even after step study ended, because life continues and I need perspective outside of my own understanding. I'm sponsoring other men to encourage them during their step studies and beyond. On Tuesdays, I often wear a CR shirt during business hours, and by doing that in the community, I've started conversations with people in Tualatin about recovery and invited them to our CR. I've given the book Life's Healing Choices to my four siblings, and one of them started going to a CR in Texas and is being transformed. On Facebook, I write a birthday blessing for each of my friends and often talk about my spiritual and recovery journey. Thank you all for hearing my recovery testimony, and may the Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you.